Good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome to the Kia D Unplugged Show special right here on We Talk Radio Network. I got to thank you so much for being here. This is your first time here. Welcome. We appreciate the love, time, and attention. It's going down tonight. Tonight we are, this is a special show. Of course, you know, we usually go on the Kia D Unplugged Show usually airs on Monday nights. Tonight is Tuesday night. And so we are going to be doing a very special show. There's a young girl by the name of Alyssa Williams, and she has been missing since November from Houston, Texas. And we are going to be talking about her today. Her disappearance is very baffling, and she actually vanished from her home in November of 2020. And it was, again, there's so many moving pieces to it. And we just want to get this information out there to the public. We appreciate you calling in. I see the phone lines lighting up. I'm sure the website, y'all are all on the website too. We appreciate it. If you are on the website, definitely check us out, all of our other shows. We've got some amazing things for absolutely everybody. Again, I'm literally at a loss of words. There's so many things that are happening at this very moment, even as it pertains to this case. And so I want to usually, if you this is your first time here, we usually start the show off with a couple of songs, so on and so forth. We're not doing that today. We are going straight into the important conversation today. Again, there's a 14-year-old girl. She is missing out of Houston, Texas. Her name is Alyssa Williams, and the resources that have been put towards trying to bring her home or just looking for her in general by the police department have been lack, and we're going to talk about that. We've been able to speak with the aunt of Alyssa, the uncle of Alyssa, the parents and grandmother of Alyssa, and we're going to talk about all of that today. So first on today, I want to bring in a young lady who is close to the family. She's actually in the family. She is the aunt of Alyssa. And for those of you who are just tuning in, we have we're actually talking about a young girl. She's 14 years old. She is missing from Houston, Texas. If you have a niece, if you have a daughter, if you have children, grandchildren, then this should definitely touch your heart. Even if you do not, this should definitely touch your heart, because that's a missing 14-year-old that is out there that no one has heard from. I actually have a 14-year-old, so I couldn't even imagine, you know, something happening to her. And I couldn't imagine, but I want to bring in today a beautiful young lady that has, since the moment she heard about it, she's been on a mission, a nonstop mission to get the word out about her niece, Alyssa. I want to bring to the show today the incredible Jennifer Wiley. How are you, Queen?
I'm good. How are you, Kia?
I am super fabulous. Cannot complain one bit. I hate we have to bring you onto the air on these kinds of circumstances, but we do appreciate you being here today.
Thank you, and I appreciate you doing this story. This is very needed, and the fact that you are willing to, you know, take the time out and do a show specifically dedicated to this, I thank you on behalf of my family. I thank you for being willing to do that for Alyssa.
Absolutely. We're going to do everything we possibly can, you know, 100%. I also want to bring in one of our lead reporters on this case, Nakia Wilson. We call her Keeks. So if you hear me say Keeks throughout the interview, you know exactly who I'm talking about. Come on in, the incredible Keeks. How are you this evening, Keeks?
Good, and yourself, sweetheart?
I am super duper fabulous. Thanks so much for your work on the case. And we're going to get to that here in just a few minutes. Jennifer, I want to start with you, and I want to talk about your relationship. Well, not necessarily relationship, I apologize, but the relationship that you have your association with Alyssa, first of all, how you're associated with Alyssa. And then let's talk about how you heard about her being missing. I want to start right there.
Okay, so I am Alyssa's aunt on her father's side. Her father is actually my youngest brother. And so that's how we are related. I will, you know, preface this with this is a very difficult situation and not easy to explain, because obviously, as you will hear tonight, there are a lot of background things that have transpired to lead up to this point. So to make it, you know, as quick but as truthful as possible, while I am Alyssa's aunt, while that is my younger brother's, my youngest brother's daughter, I have never met Alyssa. And I have not seen my brother. It's probably been about 20 years. Last time I saw him, he was a teenager, due to I was removed from the home early on. So the basic gist is that my family of origin, there's some serious dysfunction, disconnect there. And so therefore we are not together as one. So that's how I'm related to Alyssa. Now, how I found out, in some recent years, I have been in somewhat of contact with my mother via Facebook, Instagram, messages, those type of things. She actually posted a flyer that Alyssa was missing on November the 30th. And so I was just scrolling through Facebook, and I happened to see that, you know, it was a missing child. And at first I didn't really look too hard because I didn't assume it was anyone related to me. I thought maybe she might have just been posting it for someone else. And then I read and I was like, no, this is my brother's daughter and she's missing, and she's been missing, because when she posted it, I'm pretty sure that's November 30th, when she posted it, she had been missing since November the 5th. And so what was immediately alarming to me, you know, or striking to me, was that there had been communication between me and my mother in the November month. And never one time did she mention that Alyssa was missing. Never. So that's how I found out, and that's how I'm related to her, to answer your first two questions.
So let me ask you this. For those of you who are just tuning in, thank you for being here today. We're just trying to get the word out about a young girl who's missing. She's in Houston, Texas, missing from Houston, Texas. She's 14 years old. Her name is Alyssa Williams, and today I'm speaking with her aunt. And let me ask you this. Would it seem strange to you that no one reached out to you since you I could tell it seems like you hadn't, you know, been around that brother and his family in some time. It's not strange to you that no one actually reached out to you, but it is strange to help you find Alyssa, but it is strange to you that the picture on your mom's page was posted a lot later than she was actually missing, like there was a time gap.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, if I haven't seen him in 20 years, then I wouldn't be the first person that he called to say that his child was missing. So no, that wasn't alarming to me, that I wasn't told. But then I thought about it from the flip side of it, and if it were me, whether I was estranged from whoever, if my child was missing, I would want everybody and anybody to know. I also wouldn't be holding conversations, and it'd probably not come up. So what I thought was strange is that I had, you know, had some type of contact, actually a couple of situations where we had conversations and that never came up. So I thought that was strange. But then what I did was is that I also spoke with my other brothers, because I have two other brothers as well. So I have three total. And one of them made the statement that he spoke to our brother, Alyssa's father, on Thanksgiving, and was actually going to come over there, I think, and visit or something of that nature. And nobody mentioned that she was missing. And the attitude, or should I say kind of the stance that I got from my brothers was originally kind of like, well, if he isn't reaching out to us, then we're going to just let him handle it, is kind of where that was going. And I thought, I was like, why would we all not get together and try to find her? Why would we all not want to know she is okay. Whether we're close or not, you're still talking about a child that's missing, right? So I would have more concern for a stranger than I would someone who is actually related to me. That didn't make sense to me. And I was really, like, challenging to them to say, we need to do something because all resources are needed in these type of situations anyway. So there was a little bit of a kind of like a, there were conversations, I will say, I don't want to say struggle, but there were conversations that were had because I was trying to light the fire almost to say, well, if she's been missing this long, something is really, really, really wrong. Now, I'm saying that not knowing what her home life is like at all. I'm just saying the fact that she's been gone that long, nobody's seen her, nobody's heard from her. We all should be in an uproar. And that was my attitude about it.
I understand. So tell me what happened next after you found out what happened to Alyssa. Tell me what happened next.
Well, the next thing that was transpired after I, you know, like I said, I had that conversation with my brothers. We had three-way conversations. I asked my mother, you know, I said to her, why are you just now posting this? And in so many words, you know, I wasn't immediately trying to attack, but I just was like, why did you, you know, if she's been gone since November 5th, what happened that y'all are just now saying something? Because I didn't know the story, okay? Again, not knowing what their home life is like at all. Her initial response to me was that my brother didn't want her to tell anyone. He didn't want her to post it on Facebook. And so I was kind of stunned because I was like, well, if she's missing and you all don't know where she is, you haven't heard from her in weeks, why would you not want to tell everyone? Like, I didn't understand what was the hesitance and not wanting to share. I didn't get that. I still don't get that. To this day, I still don't get why this is not big news, why we don't want every, like, we should want everybody in America to know that this child is missing. So, and I think that should be for every child, but I still feel that way. And so her first response to me was that he didn't want her to post it, and he was actually upset that she did. And then her second response was that he didn't want to be asked a bunch of questions. And so, again, I'm confused because, like I said, and I want to make sure I'm transparent about this, I haven't seen or spoken to him in 20 years, so I don't know the type of adult that he has become. So I can't really say, well, I know him to say, well, he, you know, there's a reason behind that. My initial thought was, this is irrational thinking. Why would you not want anyone to know? Why would you not want to be asked questions? Why would you, like, I didn't understand that. And that was immediately taken as me trying to, I guess, judge them, which was not my intention at all. My intention was just to, like, say, okay, in case you all think this is okay, this is not okay. Like, we don't need to keep this a secret. And so that was kind of my first little pushback, if you will. I got pushback in that situation as to, you know, trying to rationalize and explain why this wasn't something that we had already been sharing and everybody knew and things of that nature. So that's what really happened next. I literally, like, called her, and I was like, what's happening? Like, is she's missing? Where did she go? You know, and then that's when we got into that conversation of, well, he didn't want her to share it and, you know, that type of thing. And I still don't understand that. But let's just say that was my first kind of red flag that something is wrong here in my viewpoint. Like, something, like, I need to keep asking questions because we're already starting off a place where I don't understand what's happening here.
Well, I know I have a 14-year-old daughter, as I mentioned, and I know that, God forbid, you know, if she did go missing, I would be yelling from sea to shining sea, but that's me as a parent, and I try not to make my feelings someone else's feelings, but that is, as a parent, that's what you would think parents would do, is, you know, yell it on a mountaintop. hey, help me find my daughter. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. She's still missing. And, you know, their reasonings at that moment to not release that, want to release that information is that, you know, something they'll have to, you know, that's something they'll deal with or they'll, you know, have to handle. But there are mm-hmm. people out there who want to bring Alyssa home.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the reason why we are here today, to shine a light on Alyssa Williams' face, to shine a light on the fact that she is still missing, and to bring her
mm-hmm.
home. I want to keep going. I know there are some other things that that happened during the course of you trying to bring Alyssa home. Let's keep going. Tell us what happened next.
So basically, my other brothers and I got together, and we had several conversations, and, you know, after time decided that we were going to go to Houston ourselves and put up flyers and knock on doors and, you know, look at the area where she had disappeared from, anything that we could basically do to help. And so that's essentially what the plan was. Unfortunately, that took us a good 2 weeks. Or 3 weeks, I should say, to kind of get that going, because we didn't get to Houston until December the 18th. And so the three of us, my two brothers and I, we did go to Houston. There was pushback in that instance, too. We did put up flyers. You know, we did go to different places where they used to live. We were in the area, you know, where she was disappeared from, and, you know, the area she would have had to walk when she left. And during that time, of course, or I shouldn't say of course, but during that time, her parents nor my mother participated in that activity. So we were basically out in Houston putting up flyers. It happened to be really raining that Saturday. It was a very rainy Saturday, but we were out putting up flyers for hours. And none of them participated. I mean, like, none of them participated. And I was blown away by that too, because, again, this is your child who's missing. You know, this is your granddaughter who's missing. So I didn't understand why they would not have wanted to participate in any way, form, or fashion. And then if we found something, you know, let's say we came across somebody who knew something, then they would be the first people to find that out. But that didn't happen. So we didn't find out anything in particular that weekend. I was told that, you know, really there was not much conversation about it in terms of, like, with my brother and at their house, because I didn't go to their house. My other brothers did. But I was told there wasn't much, you know, conversation about it. We did get a couple t-shirts made. I don't know how well that went over, but I was told that Alyssa's mother didn't appreciate the t-shirts for whatever reason. I don't know if it upset her, but that's what the case was. So it was just very alarming. And when we were there, you know, my mother actually told me that she wished we wouldn't have come. I was thinking along the lines of, whether we're estranged or not, let's try to come together and find her, because she needs to be found. And every different way that tried to be accomplished, there was pushback. I mean, there was a whole lot of pushback. From the original, you know, stories of how everything went down, originally when I asked my mother about Alyssa being missing, she said that she didn't know that she was missing until like 2 weeks. And see, understand something, me not being around them and not knowing them, I don't know their day-to-day life, right? I knew that, you know, she's a nurse and she works somewhere, but I don't know when she works, how she works, or anything of that nature. And so what I was hearing was that she was working 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, and she was gone. I didn't even realize that they all lived in the same house. So when she originally told me that, you know, her statement was they didn't call her and tell her until she was already gone for some time. Okay, so when we got to Houston, though, then that story changed. You know, then it was she knew 3 days after. You know, so it was it was a very weird thing because I was like, either you knew 3 days or you knew 2 weeks. Which one is it? When did you, you know, when did you know? I still don't have a clear understanding of when she really knew. Let me say that. But I know that she told me two different things. And so that was kind of like at the point where I began to kind of ask more and more questions, try to dig deeper to find out what's really happening here. Needless to say, after that visit to Houston, we didn't have any more contact because that was obviously something that she didn't want us to do, to be there. So I began trying to contact the police myself to figure out what was happening. The original detective that I talked to, and I got an attorney to help me with this because I'm not familiar with the law standpoint on how it works with runaways and juveniles. So the first thing that I found out was that when you file a report, it really depends on the report that you file. So let's say, for instance, runaway juvenile. There are hundreds and thousands of runaway juveniles. So when you file that report as a runaway juvenile, that's like saying your child willingly left. And so the police take it as such. In other words, they will look at the information that you provide for them, meaning you, meaning the person that makes the report, and then they will follow up on what's on that report, and that's that. So when I spoke to the first detective, he informed me that my brother had made the report. He had my brother's name, his address, Alyssa's school, of supposedly a boyfriend and the boyfriend's parents' name, and the old apartment complex that they lived in, and that's all he had. He didn't even know Alyssa's mother's name because he asked me what was her name. And so he went and looked into the information that was provided for him, and he didn't look any further. And so, of course, my question was, well, why haven't you interviewed the whole family? They're all in the same house together. Why haven't you interviewed the other side of her family? You know, why haven't you, you know, and he basically told me that when you file a runaway juvenile report, they don't do all of that stuff. So you're not going to get the same response that you would get if you go into a police station and you say, my child's been taken from me and I think they're in danger. You're not going to get that same response. And what he furthermore told me was that unless her parents, not me, not you, Kia, not anybody else, but unless her parents say to the police that they think she's in danger, the investigation as it has been going will remain the same. In other words, the effort will remain the same. And by all accounts, the effort is little to none at this point in time. So I'm asking, again, a lot of questions because I'm like, first of all, why was it not required that you provide all information? So, like, who is her mother? Who is her father? Who is her grandmother? Who all lives in the house? So why was that? Like, I didn't understand why that wasn't required. And I didn't understand why it wasn't volunteered either. But I was asking the policeman these questions at this point. And then, you know, he made the statement that he had not been in constant contact with my brother. I didn't think that that was true, but I don't know, but that's what he said to me. And so he had several conversations with my attorney, and while speaking with my attorney, he referred to Alyssa as a nigger girl. So full stop. Mm-hmm. Once that happened, then we had to file a complaint, because obviously if you're referring to her as that, then you're not trying to look for her, right? So we filed the complaint. I mean, literally, letters have been sent from everybody to the mayor, the sheriff's office, the police department. Everyone, like, got information regarding this case. So we filed a complaint about the officer. They replaced the officer on the case with the African-American officer. So they gave us a new officer on the case. This officer spoke with me at length. I spoke with the sergeant at length. My attorney spoke with them and kind of got the sense that maybe we were going to be on a better track just because he seemed like he was more willing to communicate and try to, you know, look into different things. But the fact still remains that, again, go back to what I said about when you're dealing with the police. It's been made very clear that because my brother and her mother have not actually said to the police that they think Alyssa's in danger, the police are not showing a sense of urgency to look for her. Period. Like, that's what it boils down to. And so I wasn't, you know, really sure what to do with that, because at this point in time, we're going on, it's about to be 6 months, I believe, November 5th to now. Why is it not the logical thing to think that she's in danger? Like, who say, what child say gone this long and nothing is wrong? And you haven't heard from her and you haven't talked to her and you don't know if she's well. I'm told she has severe allergies. She's asthmatic. I'm told she didn't leave, but with a few little, you know, things, nothing substantial. She didn't have a phone. How is she making it all this time under the premonition that she's okay? There's just no way for that. And so that's kind of where it got to, Kia, in so many ways. I'm trying to think, what am I leaving out, that so much has occurred?
I'm going to come back. I want to put a pin right there really quickly. I want to – one brief sec, because I want you to keep going with that, because I know there is so much more to unfold here. You brought up your attorney. We actually had the opportunity to speak with your attorney, and we actually have your attorney, Mr. Giles Mubarak, here tonight.
Oh, okay, great.
Attorney Mubarak, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely we can. Absolutely we can. Thanks for being here tonight. I think we're getting a little echo. I think you may have a problem on somewhere else as well. Gotcha.
I'm sorry. Perfect. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
We are super awesome tonight. Thank you again. We appreciate you coming on the show and being here and speaking with myself and one of my lead reporters, Keeks, on this case. It is a baffling case, and we do want to bring as much attention as we possibly can to the fact that there is a missing 14-year-old out there. As you heard her aunt Jennifer say, she's been missing now for 6 months. We know that Attorney Mubarak, you're someone who actually found out about this case, and actually you put up a reward, am I correct?
Correct. Yes, I did.
I'd like to, well, first of all, thank you so much. You know, the fact that there's so many missing girls out there, hundreds of thousands, as Ms. Jennifer mentioned, and I wish there was somebody like that fighting for them, somebody like Jennifer fighting for them as an advocate. We really appreciate it. Let's talk, if you don't mind, about your experience and some of the things that you've had to deal with. I know you've had a lot of interaction with the police department, even the mayor's office. Do you mind kind of giving us a description of what your experience with this case?
This is the most astounding case I've ever experienced from the outside or personal involvement. I have never seen a police department, for one, have such disinterest in a child on any level. And I'm from New Jersey. I'm from Paterson, New Jersey. And what I can say, I mean, I understand that police departments are overwhelmed and maybe some cases. I am so sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And unfortunately, they may tend to put some priorities above others. However, this case, when you're talking about a 14-year-old child, once I got involved and I had been informed of most of you've just learned, I realized that the police department literally had no involvement and did not even go as far as doing a welfare check. Upon my request to learn certain things, I met a ton of resistance at every turn. And so eventually I reached a particular detective who, from what I understand, presides over a missing persons department. And that detective was very apprehensive and even abrasive when it came to discussing my concerns for her and whether or not there was any legitimate procedural process to take place. And it got to a point where literally he wanted to wrestle with me as if the problem was me and not what I was calling for. I was calling for concerns of a child. And that he would regurgitate was basically everything that he had gotten from the father, Alyssa's father, whom by that time I had already had a discussion with. And he led me down a path that just from that point of view, had he talked with this man, there's no way that that particular discussion at least doesn't escalate to an investigatory search or something deeper than what they had done. And so my continued push on that resulted in him spewing that language of not having the resources for any Negro child who, at this time I learned he had saw photos that I come to learn that the father had provided him. And I haven't seen these photos, but allegedly these are some illicit photos. So not only was he informed that Alyssa had run away on her own volition, but that she was a child of a certain behavior. So providing this information clearly would not result in a diligent search for his kid, because you're already being led down a path of this child being of such aberrant behavior that there's no true concern for her even at home. My question was for Darius to suggest, which is Alyssa's father, for him to suggest that she was a runaway. I wondered what was that based on? What did he premise that theory off of? Because there's no letters. She hasn't talked to anyone. No friends had been informed. Nothing left on social media. And his suggestion that this started behind his taking of her cell phone, and that she was angry that he took her cell phone because her participation on social media was distasteful. And so he took her cell phone. So she doesn't have any access to anything to continue her communication with social media and the outreach to some friends. No one's seen her. No one's heard from her. She's a 14-year-old child with no money, no cell phone, no clothing, and no particular information that would suggest her being a runaway on her own volition. So where did he get this from? Why would you tell the police something that is not supported or substantiated by anything valid, other than the fact that you have led them in directions that would warrant or not warrant a search or not warrant a deeper investigation? Not even to the point where, this was in school. So not even to the point where you go to her school or you want whatever it is the violations are for truant kids who don't report to school, you took all of that out of the equation by suggesting that she left on her own with no corroboration of that fact. So my discussion with particular Officer Gill in asking that question, I said, doesn't that at least warrant a welfare check to go to that residence and inquire just a little more? And that was the resistance that I got, even to the point where he would make the disparaging comment that this young Negro child didn't warrant the resources or the use of the type of investigation that we were requesting. So, yeah, this entire case from top to bottom has taken on a path I've never seen before. I would never expect from any parents. And the more I took it personal, and the more that I've had the opportunity to speak with her, I just learned things about the family, even as she has grown up. So there has always been a problem in this household. And for me, I wish it would be my pleasure. I wish that Alyssa ran away. I hope that that's the result. I pray that that's the result. I mean, basically seeing what we've gotten from this family, I wish she had run away a long time ago and literally had a different result than where we are right now. But I dread any child having to grow up in an environment like this. And there's another child at that household right now. If this the type of response you'll get from your parents, then I have concern even for that child if there was anything wrong at that household. So, yeah, this has been a big problem. I'm in New Jersey. I have no horse in this race personally other than the fact that this is a young African-American child. I've grown very fond of her aunt and her diligent effort to pursue this result for a niece that she doesn't even have a close bond with. But if Alyssa is out there, I hope that she gets to hear it. There is someone who loves you and your family, despite what you may have been experiencing in that household, that there's someone out here fighting and lobbying for you at all costs, and you have an aunt that loves you more than anything you could ever imagine. So I hope that she's out there. But what we've gotten from the Houston Police Department and the resistance that I've gotten from that family, I think there's more than enough to at least warrant an investigatory search. And if that escalates even more so, then fine. That's what the procedural process is supposed to be about. Small steps to determine whether or not we can take the next step to go further. Police Department hasn't had any concern to even go that far. And yet, as I can add, every comment made from that department has been, this is what Darris has told us. It's almost as if he has led the investigation. And you don't want to specifically point a finger, but when so much leads to him, how is it that you have only responded to what, you know, the most incriminating information comes from that direction, and your entire investigation is based on his information? It's unbelievable to me.
Unbelievable. Thank you so much for sharing. One of the other important things that I want to mention is that Jennifer had received a lot of pushback once she started to try and help the family locate Alyssa, or just some specific efforts to try and get the word out that she's missing. She received a lot of pushback. Are you familiar with some of the pushback that she received?
Pushback is another statement. She's literally been threatened. And you're threatened by the immediate residents, everyone from the immediate residents, to the point that there's even presently, there's a posting, a Facebook posting under an alias name of the mother who chooses to make comments threatening the individuals who are participating in the search of her child. Jennifer has assembled a team to go out in that community to seek as much information as she could for this woman, Laquana Williams, her accurate name, for her child. She nor the father has participated in the search for their child, while the estranged aunt has assembled a team and lobbied in for as many people that would join her to seek out their child. And as a result, if those are willing, your listeners are willing to go to Facebook and see the name. I believe it's Lachey. I don't know if the last name is being used. I'm sorry. Lachey Alex is the name that's being used. it's baffling that this woman would be threatening the only assistance out here, the only search for her child. And again, if that's not enough information for the police, then what does it take? What would it take to go to that household and do a deeper search? And again, I'm not going to put the onus on the entire police station, but what I do know, here in New Jersey, you would have had a search warrant turning your beds upside down, particularly looking for physical evidence, if you had at least this much information to start with.
I 100% agree, and I will also add to that, I was also someone that received an idle threat from the mother regarding my interview today. She did not want this interview to happen today, and I was baffled completely. I'm still in shock. Not only did I receive a phone call from her, not only did I receive a personal message from her in my Facebook DMs, she also decided to put it on underneath her daughter's picture on a post where we're posting about the show, advertising about the show. She actually posted underneath her daughter's picture that she did not approve of us doing this. And it just broke my heart because as a mother, if my daughter ever went back and saw the efforts that were being made and that her own mother, for whatever reason, decided she did not want this interview to go on. And the only thing that we are attempting to do is get the information about her 14-year-old daughter being missing out there. I'm speechless. I've never dealt with anything like this in my entire life. Speechless.
Well, I'll tell you, Ms. Davis, this interview is no more than an addition to every other step that's been taken to seek her child. And this has been the response to every other step that has been taken. But what I'd like to say to the viewers, I need every one of you out there. Black lives need to start mattering more to black people. And when we have issues internally, we have issues at home, not when things happen to us from white people or other ethnicities, but internally, in our immediate community, starts within, then without. And so everyone out there, a young black 14-year-old child, this is the innocent, but the birth of the next generation. This is a young potential mother, a young potential wife. She's 14 years old, and she has gone off the grid completely. No communication, no social media. From what we know, no medication if, in fact, she suffers from the ailment that the grandmother has suggested. No telephone. And somehow those who are assigned the duties to protect and serve have found that there is no justification to go look within. Something happens to the wife, you go look straight at the husband. Something happens to the husband, you look at the wife. This is normally the protocol. You tell me something happens to a child and you don't look at no one in the household. It's unreal.
Unreal. Absolutely unreal. The Houston Police Department, we want you to reach out to them, 713-884-3131. We do not want you to miss the opportunity to reach out to the officers in this case, mention Alyssa Williams, and let them know you are, listen, just put some pressure on this case. But ask them what they're doing right now. Find out where they are in the investigation. Let's put some pressure on the police department. Her name is Alyssa Williams. She's 14 years old, missing from Houston, Texas, since November the 5th, 2020. The police department's number is 713-884-3131. Thank you so much, Attorney Mubarak. We truly appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Ms. Davis and Jennifer. I just want you to, I want you to know, and I want to listen and know, you have a fabulous aunt. And I've come to love this woman and her passion. And we would all be so grateful to have such a committed friend, family member to have as a support. And I appreciate you very much, Jennifer, and I'll continue to rock this road with you until we get answers. Thank you very much, Ms. Davis. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Oof. I don't even know why I just started tearing up, but I did.
Hmm.
It's just
I mean, Kia, it's a, you know, this is a very difficult situation, and one of the reasons why, because many people I know are like, well, why are you doing interview now? Here's the thing. I have not been completely transparent with my followers, with people who support me, because this is, quote, unquote, my family. And there are a lot of things about this that do not make sense and are not right. And so I have been reluctant, you could use that word. I wanted to give my family the opportunity to speak for themselves. And let me be very clear on that. I have given them the opportunity on several occasions. I have sent media personalities, everybody who's contacted me, I've sent them to them to contact them so that they could tell this story, so that I, in turn, would not have to do that. And every time I did that, again, what you're hearing is it's just been straight pushback. I mean, I've been asked everything from why do I care so much to this is really none of my business. I'm trying to gain money from this, which I don't know how anybody's going to gain money from a missing child, but okay. You know, I'll take all of that heat. I've been accused of making this about what happened to me when I was a child. What happened to me as a child has given me passion to be as strong as I am in this moment. And what I know for a fact is that every child needs an advocate, every child. And when a child can't speak for themselves, adults have to. We have to. We have to. Now, 100%. That I know. And so I have, again, you know, tried to give them the opportunity to say more, to do more. This is not the first time that I'm saying out loud that the police have said on more than one occasion, unless her parents, not her aunt, not her uncle, not Kia D, her parents have to make the step and say, we believe she's in danger. At this point, how can we not think that at this point? I mean, truly, November the 5th, we all know if you live in Texas or you were in Texas when they had the storm, I wasn't there, but I know it was horrible. There's no way someone could have been on the street and survived that, especially a child. The area that she disappeared from, I was there at nighttime. It's like a strip, like literally a strip. There's no way that she walked down that way and didn't get approached. I mean, it's just unfathomable. And so my thing is, at the end of the day, I'll take people being upset with me for telling more than what I should if it means that we find out what has happened to her. And there's been plenty of, you know, stories. I've had people tell me, well, maybe she's somewhere pregnant. If that's the case, then who impregnated her and why did she have to disappear? Why did she have to not be in school? Why did she have to not be with her family, if that's the case? And, I mean, when I say this has been a collective effort to keep this from everybody knowing, it's not just my mother, my brother and his wife, even on Alyssa's mother's side. Like, I got the message that they don't want to be asked any questions as well. How can you not want to be asked questions when a child is missing? How dare you say you don't want to be contacted about a child that is related to you at that is missing? These are things I cannot answer. And so my thing is, for everyone who has inboxed me, because I've gotten hundreds of inboxes, I've gotten people volunteering their gifts, their time, their money to help with this effort. And so what I'm saying to all those people is, I have filed reports. I talked to policemen. I've done everything that I can do as her aunt. But her parents and her grandmother, who lives in the same house with her, have some things they got to do. And we've got to, at some point, you can have compassion for people, because I can't imagine what they feel. Like, literally, something in you makes you love your child to some degree. So I'm not going to say that they're not upset. I'm not going to say that they're not hurt. But even in compassion, there's accountability. There's got to be some. And so for anyone to want me to stop looking for her, you crazy. Like, I'm not going to do that. For anyone who wants me to be quiet, I'm not going to do that. It's the wrong thing to do. Clearly something has happened to this child, and somebody knows something. You brought up the fact that a reward was put up, a $25,000 reward was put up, and we got no tips. No tips? Nobody? I have a hard time believing that there's not things that we're not being told, that that's not being said here. And so I just want to not only have it on me, but I want to share it with all of you, that at the end of the day, I can only dig so far. I did ask the police the last time I talked to, and I want to make this correction, Kia. The detective on this case, his name is Detective Tim Johnson. His direct phone number is 832-394-1868. 832-394-1868. Detective Tim Johnson. The very last time I spoke to him, which wasn't too long ago, I asked him directly, have you looked into my family and made sure that there's nothing else here? Have you cleared them? His response to me was he has not found anything yet, but that doesn't mean he won't find anything. They have not been cleared. So if the police are saying that, where does that leave me? What am I to think? Literally, that's what he said. I quote unquote. I asked him, should I be worried? He said, you should be very worried. So I'm at a loss, because here we are, the time is just ticking away, and it's like it's just getting lost in the shuffle. Nobody wants to talk about it no more. Nobody wants to post the flyer no more, you know, and then we've had all these efforts to make this interview not happen. I don't understand for the life of me why somebody wouldn't want an interview done about trying to find their child, because that is what this is about. Point blank, period. I don't understand why we wouldn't be welcoming all agencies, CPS, DPS, PPS, whoever, everyone.
All hands on deck.
All of them. So I wanted to say that, because many people have asked me, and I have ducked and dodged. I'm not ducking and dodging. No more questions. I'm making my statement publicly right now. I don't know what has happened to Alyssa. I don't know. And I don't know that my family is telling the truth. I don't know that. And unfortunately, things have happened to lead me believe that they are not. And that's just the bottom line. And so at some point, I believe somebody listening to this knows something. Please say it. Please tell us. Because if she is alive, she's somewhere. And so that's really where we are here. Like, that's point blank where we are.
I know that, first of all, let me just say this. Thank you. I know Attorney Giles Mubarak, thank you. I want to thank you as well again on behalf of Alyssa and all the young girls right now that are missing and have no advocate for them. You know, it is amazing that someone will just speak up and keep fighting for a child that they never met. But that, you know, I mean, it's just, I see the passion behind what you're doing. And I know that you did not get into this looking and trying to attack your family. I can see that. That is not what you did. In the process, uncovering layers like an onion, it just happened that way. I do want to, in just a few moments, I'm going to bring in Keeks, which is my top correspondent here for We Talk Radio Network. We're going to bring her in. But before we do that, you mentioned your childhood and how you grew up. If you don't mind telling us about your childhood and how you grew up, we greatly appreciate it, if you don't mind sharing.
You know, I think here what's important is that I keep this about Alyssa as much as possible, because the number one accusation that I have received from my family is that I'm making this about my pain. It is no secret, because my testimony, my story has been posted in many, many, many places. You know, I am a sexual abuse survivor. I am many different things. And as I said at the beginning of this interview, you know, my core family, unfortunately, is very dysfunctional, and there's a lot of problems in it. There's a lot of things that have not gone right. And so my reason for obviously thinking and feeling some of the things I have felt is because I know what they are capable of. I know what my family is capable of. With that being said, I cannot say for sure what has happened, because I don't know. I can only share with you all what I do know and what has transpired so far, okay? And all of those things have given me plenty of warning bells to let me know that something is not right about this situation, point blank, period. And I would like to say that would be still my truth, even if I had a perfect childhood, even if everything was great, even if my family was on the up and up, and this happened, I would still be saying something is wrong here. I would still be saying this doesn't make sense. I would still be saying somebody knows something. You know, so, you know, while I agree that pathologies of families are very important, what happened in the past can come back to haunt you, and that's also important. I want to make it clear, though, that that's not what this is about. Like, this is really about finding her, hopefully alive. That's what this is about. And this is about holding anyone accountable who has had any hand in her disappearance. Now, whoever that is, I have no qualms with turning them in, because I feel like that's what should happen. And so I'm just simply saying publicly, even if that turns out to be my family, it's still wrong. Alyssa still deserves better. And I'm going to keep pushing the issue until we find out what happened, point blank, period.
Something happened with my mic, guys. My apologies. We thought it was everybody else's mic. It was actually my mic. My apologies, team.
My
mic got muted. No worries. So we're going to bring in Keeks. Somehow Keeks got disconnected, so we're going to bring Keeks back in here.
Hi.
All right, Keeks. Are you there? We got you?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, guys. My apologies on the dead air. You know, I hate dead air over here. Boy, that drives me crazy, but it happens in live radio. This is a live radio show, by the way. For those who did not know, this is live. This is not pre-recorded. We are actually speaking today with the aunt of Alyssa Williams, who's a 14-year-old young girl who's missing from Houston, Texas, since November the 5th, 2020. And we're now going to speak with Keeks, who's one of my lead investigators here with We Talk Radio Network. And she's had the opportunity to speak with several people involved in the case, as well as I have had an opportunity to speak with several people. Just an FYI, we have not had an opportunity to speak with the police department. We did reach out to them on numerous occasions, but we have not received any return phone calls at this time. So, but there are several people that we did have an opportunity to speak with. We had a chance to speak with one of your brothers, Mr. Chandler, as well as your older brother, who's the father of Alyssa, the grandmother of Alyssa, your attorney Merbank, and as well as later on, we'll talk about a conversation that I had with Alyssa's mother. So we have had contact with her as well. Keeks, I want to bring you on in. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. So let's talk about your report on and investigation on the case and things that you found and the correspondence that you had with the people that you spoke with.
Okay. I started off my interviews with Alyssa's father, Mr. Darius Williams, and I started off by first confirming whether she was missing or not. And her father told me that the status that she is still missing, there has been no leads at all in the 6 months. For the flyers that are going around, there were a few misconceptions on her description due to height and weight. Her father confirmed to me that the proper description was the flyer saying that she weighed 180 pounds. So I got those details confirmed. When speaking to her father, I wanted to know what his last encounter with Alyssa was for that day. And from what he told me, on the last day that he saw his daughter, she got in trouble. I'm not sure for what. But in the process of her getting in trouble, her phone was taken by her father, and he told her that they would discuss it in the morning. However, at 3 a.m., her younger sister came to the parents and told her that Alyssa had left. So when he found out that she was missing or walked off, I asked, was there anything significant taken to say, hey, like, maybe she's packed a bag to go somewhere for a weekend, or was it nothing at all? And the father pointed out that there was a backpack taken, some Cheetah print shoes, he's not sure of the brand, a few clothes, and a very important piece that he noted was she always wore a navy blue Great Wolf Lodge sweater, which he also told me that you can see her in that in her TikTok profile. So when it came to mentioning the social medias, he informed me that Alyssa was only allowed to be on TikTok during the time of her disappearance, but they blocked her on all her other social media. He didn't give reasons as to why. So once I gathered that information, you know, I asked, you know, what efforts were already exhausted to in the 6 month period. And since she's been gone, her father personally checked her all the other social medias outside of TikTok, checking to see who's following, if anybody's messaging, or if we can see her, any of her friends' stories or pictures or anything. That's what he's been doing for the last 6 months. And that was my first conversation with her father, and that was all I had got. Also noting that he told me that the Texas Marshals had picked up his daughter's missing person case. But, however, on all the flyers, the Texas Marshals did not list their number. They were continuing to use Houston Police Department. So that was all I had gathered from her father when we first spoke, was just basically he was saying if any flyers go around, he would like flyers to go up. He would like any information to be relayed to the Houston Police Department or the Texas Marshals, and that was all I got from Mr. Darius.
And then you also had the opportunity to speak with the grandmother. I think after that you made a call to the grandmother. Would you like to tell us about that investigation as well?
Yes, ma'am. I contacted the grandmother, and I asked, when speaking to the grandmother, I just wanted to know, as the grandmother and not a parent, you know, what was the atmosphere like for Alyssa and the other children growing up in the house? So the grandmother, she told me that she's a COVID nurse, and she works some 15 days on, 15 days off, so she's not home quite often. So a lot of times when she is home, if there have been anything that has transpired in the home, she's being brought up to speed. However, on the night of Alyssa's disappearance, she was at work, but she received a phone call from Alyssa's phone. She's not sure if it was Alyssa or Madison. She missed the call due to her being at work. So she's not sure who was calling or what, you know, what was wanted or what was trying to be told to her, but that she did have a missing phone call. So I asked, what has the atmosphere been like from what she does see when she is in the house ever since Alyssa has been gone? And she told me that a crazy hellhole is a light way to describe the atmosphere. And from what I gathered from her grandmother, Alyssa and her were the closest ones in the house. And she felt that a lot of the household issues that were there came to Alyssa being in the teenage storm years. And she felt that way due to a lot of the issues came from either boys, authority issues with her parents, or issues with her school. So she told me that Alyssa, when it came to school, Alyssa has, she's an asthmatic with peanut allergies and seafood allergies. And there were two occasions where the school knowingly gave Alyssa food that she was allergic to. One happened in the cafeteria. She was given fish sticks. And then there was something on a school field trip involving nuts. She said the school took full responsibility for that and issued a statement to the father that they take responsibility. But Alyssa was bullied due to the reactions from seafood and swelling up and how her face was and how she would talk or how she couldn't breathe. She mentioned to me that Alyssa was held back twice, and that also contributed to the bullying she received. She could pass all her tests but struggled with day-to-day assignments in the classroom. And, you know, in classrooms, there's times where students will grade other students' papers. And Alyssa did not like that aspect due to she struggled with that part of school. But the grandmother believed that the biggest struggle for the schoolwork came to Alyssa being dyslexic without having that diagnosis. And that was an effort that she was trying to get, you know, figured out for Alyssa to be able to help her when it came to school. So as you know, when COVID occurred, all the children were pulled out of school and transitioned to online schooling. And that was a huge stressor for Alyssa because she now did not have that social interaction with kids her age and her friends. So once I got that, I asked Alyssa's grandmother to describe what she saw as the interactions between Alyssa and her parents, Alyssa and her, Alyssa and her siblings. Her dad is the authoritarian of the house, so Alyssa did not get along with him due to the authority figure that he was. When asking about Alyssa's mom, she took it was a lot of deep sighs and a long pause. And her final response was Alyssa's mom was okay, but Alyssa bucked her authority. However, when it came to makeup and hair, that's where they bonded because Alyssa wanted to follow in her mother's footsteps of being a beautician and cosmetologist, and she also wanted her master's in a business association. So they stressed to her that her grades in school would prevent her from getting her master's. So I once I got the gist of what the household was like from, you know, another person who's really on the outside looking in of a father, a parent and child relationship, I wanted to focus on her actual disappearance. So the grandmother, I asked, were there any collective ideas from the parents or anybody in the family or friends of where she could be, who could have taken her, or anything of that nature? So Alyssa's grandmother didn't find out until day three that she was missing. She was away at work. She said that her son did not want to worry her. But upon further discussion on what each of them believed happened, the parents refused to believe that someone just took Alyssa off the street. However, the grandmother does believe that someone took her, and her basis on believing that, she brought up her husband and how his daughter was being sex trafficked for over a year and a half, but later returned to the streets of Houston. And with Alyssa's sudden disappearance and with her final, one of her final conversations to Alyssa was about her being provocative on social media. And I quote, she told Alyssa, "People may not be who you think they are, no matter how close you are." And she believes that Alyssa is going through the same, a similar situation that her husband's daughter did. And she just wants her home. But she does believe that someone has taken Alyssa, she's being sex trafficked, and she does believe that she will have a similar happy ending of being returned home to be found by her family. And that was, while we were talking on that, there was some disturbance that kind of shifted the course of her interaction with me, and she rushed off the phone. So I didn't get anything past that with the grandmother.
Great job. Thank you very much. Great job. there was a portion of conversation with the grandmother where she mentioned that Alyssa called her on, Alyssa's phone number came up on her phone the night Alyssa disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I do have, and I always have had this question. I would like to bring Jennifer in. I don't know if she has an answer for this. If the phone was taken away, I think you mentioned earlier that she had had her phone taken away. If the phone was taken away from her, how could she have have made that call from her phone?
Right.
I mean, that's my question. Because I was not, you know, there when this interview was done. So this is communication that you all had. Please make this clear without me. So you're saying that my brother told you he took her phone the night before. And then you're also saying my mother told you she got a call from that same phone that was supposed to be taken.
Yes. From speaking with her father, Alyssa, the last day that she was at home, she got her phone taken as a form of punishment. And then when speaking to her grandmother about the night of the disappearance, she did say that she did receive a phone call from Alyssa's phone. Yes.
Okay. So, again, that doesn't make sense if the phone was taken. But okay.
Okay. I just didn't know if you had any additional, if you knew anything additional around that or if you had heard anything.
Well, I don't, because that part my mother never shared with me, and I've never heard that story before. See, so that's why. But I hear a different story regularly. So originally I was told that her sister woke up her parents around midnight and said that, you know, Alyssa is gone. That is the story that I was told. I was told that her father had taken her phone prior to her leaving the day before, and that she was upset about her phone being taken. That's what I was told. Now, the rest about my mother receiving a call from that phone and all of that, that was never told to me, and this is my first time hearing that.
Okay. There, let me also ask you another question, Ms. Keeks. You mentioned the Texas Marshals. I want to also, I know we also reached out to the Texas Marshals as well. Can you also, the Texas Marshals was actually mentioned by both the grandmother and the father, according to Keeks and the investigative report that she's done. They both mentioned the Texas Marshal actually handling the case to some degree at this point. And so, of course, as investigators, we, you know, investigate. Go ahead, Keeks, let us know exactly what happened with that.
Okay, so the Texas Marshals was actually my third phone call. I was transferred to Deputy Alfredo Perez, and when transferred to him, Alyssa's name didn't ring any bells at all. But I had started off my conversation with him basically bringing to light the facts of the case that she's been missing for 6 months. She's 14. She's out of Houston, Texas. And you know, he asked me what made me believe that the Texas Marshals were handling the case. So I talked to him briefly about the conversation I had with Alyssa's father and him mentioning that the Texas Marshals had picked up the case. And he wanted to make it very clear to me that when it comes to missing children's or missing persons cases of this caliber, where she's listed as a runaway or anything other than a missing person without an Amber Alert or anything of that high nature, the U.S. Marshals are not going to take over the case. I asked him, when he didn't see her in their database, I asked him, was there a time lapse from whether Houston level, getting it up to you guys, what was the time lapse for how long she could pop up? There is no time lapse. For the fact that they will oversee assistance, but they're not going to transfer the case into the marshal's hands. So whoever has primary jurisdiction over the case, whether it be Houston Police Department or Harris County, the U.S. Marshals are only there to assist them in whatever they need. So Deputy Perez told me that he would reach out to the Missing Children's Unit out of Houston to see if they have Alyssa down there to let them know that there are people who are interested in bringing her home and trying to collect any information as far as that. But they do not, they're not handling the case, overseeing it as in charge. They're just offering assistance for whatever Harris County and Houston PD will need.
Gotcha. But they did not have her name specifically on file.
No, they did not have that. They did not have her name at all. Anything that he knew about Alyssa was given to me, was given by me to him. I'm sorry, was given by me to him. And I did not hear anything back. Like I said, he was going to reach out to the Missing Children's Unit. I never got any correspondence, but I did, you know, I did find out that there's a difference between them handling a case and then offering assistance. And in Alyssa's case, that's all that they would be doing for their part, is to offer assistance to the police department.
Gotcha. Wow. Very, there's a lot of just moving pieces to this. Like, again, like we said, like an onion. The only thing, again, we're wanting to do here is bring Alyssa home. The focus is bringing Alyssa home. Again, if you're just tuning in tonight, thank you so much for being here. This is the Kia D Unplugged Show. I am Kia D, and this is We Talk Radio Network, and you can find us every single day at wetalkradio.com. Alyssa's picture actually is on our website. If you go to wetalkradio.com, if you go to shows, right under the Kia D Unplugged, so you'll be able to see Alyssa's picture. And right there also is some information about her. She is a missing 14-year-old young lady, missing since November the 5th, 2020. And as we all know here in Texas, it was a gut-wrenching couple of weeks ago. We experienced something that have never experienced before. It was freezing out here. And so we know that if she was on the street, I could only imagine what she would have to do in order to get shelter. One of the other key pieces to this is that she allegedly did move into the neighborhood recently. So I'm not too familiar with how familiar she would be with this neighborhood. Sometimes a lot of you know the neighborhood very well, so on and so forth. But according to reports, she recently moved to this neighborhood. And so if she did have to leave at midnight or 3 a.m., according to reports, this particular area is not conducive to what any 25-year-old would want to be walking the streets on, let alone a 14-year-old. At 12 a.m., at 4 a.m., 3 a.m., 12 in the afternoon. So there is much concern. She is in grave danger, because no one has heard from her. And so there's another element to this with no one hearing from her and efforts being made by where today we're speaking with her aunt, the incredible and amazing Miss Jennifer. Of course, my investigative reporter, Keeks, has done a great job gathering information from key people and witnesses in the case. And from the investigation that we have done thus far, things are just awry. We can't even put it together. I can't even put words around really what's happening. At the end of the day, she's still missing. And we are going to do everything that we can, even continuing to have the conversation about Alyssa. I will continue to talk about Alyssa being missing until she's found. I will continue to post her face on my social media platforms until she's found. We'll continue to spread the word. Fingers, toes, phalanges crossed that she is found. The neighborhood, again, I want to speak on that piece, the neighborhood, Miss Jennifer. You actually did, excuse me, have an opportunity to go to that particular neighborhood and walk the neighborhood. Can you tell us more information about that particular neighborhood that she would have been leaving from at either 12 or 3 a.m.?
I mean, we actually, like, went to there's a very strip mall right there close by her house. And we went to each little store that would have been open, because by the time that we, you know, got to that point of the looking and the searching, it was nighttime, you know. And so I can tell you that, you know, I would not have been out there walking by myself. I mean, I had my brother with me, and my brother is a very huge guy. So that's kind of like why it would have been okay. But it was, to be honest, it's a seedy area. It's not anywhere that a child would be safe walking, much less go unnoticed. It's just not. I mean, I saw a pregnant crackhead with no teeth standing at the door to the store. I mean, it was just, it wasn't a good sight. It wasn't a good area at nighttime to be in at all. I'm also being told with the Houston Police Department and also some work that Quanell X did that area is high traffic for people who are being trafficked as well. So, you know, that's why I keep saying, you know, even if it is true that she decided she wanted to run away, it's very, very, very hard to believe that once she got outside, something didn't happen to her. That's what I think I wish my family would consider. Even if it was in her mind, I'm going to run away to somebody's house and da-da-da-da-da. I find it hard to believe in that area that she was able to get away unharmed and be gone this long.
It is a baffling situation. It does go on. You know, of course, as investigative reporters, we come back to our journalistic table and we have conversations. And after speaking with Keeks and her getting some questions answered by the family, of course, just trying to figure out, put all this puzzle together, we realized there were some follow-up questions that we needed to have. And so Keeks started calling the father first. So Keeks, if you'd like to come back on in and tell us about the follow-up call that you made with the father.
Hi, yes. So key point, when I did call the father back, he assumed that I was calling him back to get Alyssa's social media handles outside of TikTok. Because he did email me over the TikTok tick handles and told me that send me further social media handles so we could know which accounts to look out for. So when I did my follow-up call, that's what he automatically assumed I was calling for. So I told him, I was like, you know, I wasn't actually calling to remind you about that. I actually just had some follow-up questions. So when I told him I had follow-up questions, I noticed that there was a silence on the phone as if it had been muted. But he came back to the phone and, you know, I asked him about the TikTok. You know, I saw a cute, adorable little boy. I'm like, is this her sister? Is this, cousin? I mean, her brother. I'm sorry, not her sister. Cousin. And he informed me that it was her younger brother. So she has two younger siblings, you know, who look up to their big sister. So that was even more like, it touched me even more to know that, you know, he's five, around five-ish. And they appeared really close from watching the TikTok. Her and her siblings seemed to be very close. So my first follow-up question outside of the TikTok was, did any flyers that him, his family, put out into the world, did they create a response from the community? And he wasn't understanding my direction with the question. And I asked him, like, did people come together to help post signs, to go searching? He did start to tell me that his family did put together a rally. But in that moment of him answering, Alyssa's mother interjected because she looked up We Talk Radio and saw that there was going to be an exclusive interview held. And she was very, very highly upset about it. She doesn't want the interview to happen. She told me that there will be severe consequences left for anybody who had anything to do with this interview being done. I tried to just inform her that, you know, I'm only here to help bring light to something that can help bring Alyssa home. It became a very hostile conversation. So I, on my part, ended the call because it wasn't no need for that, because at the end of the day, the focus is Alyssa. And at the end of the day, I'm not going to be quiet. Kia's not going to be quiet. Her aunt's not going to be quiet. Everybody who cares and just has a heart as a human being is not going to be quiet on this. And that's what they want. They want they didn't want this interview to happen. They wanted completely silence. They wanted flyers taken down, which shocked me because I just talked to the father this morning, which I even informed Alyssa's mother that I talked to her father this morning, and he was so adamant about flyers being posted and wanting the word out and wanting somebody to provide something different. So the total shift from maybe probably 4 hours from talking in the morning to when I called back, it was very puzzling and perplexing for me. And that's when the phone call just kind of ended.
And about 10 minutes after that call that she had with the father and the mother, I received a phone call from the mother. We did not have the mother's contact information. Otherwise, we would have reached out to the mother 100%. But we didn't have that. And upon trying to reach that, as you can see, her social media handle, as we talked about earlier, isn't listed as her first and last name, so it wasn't easy to really find her. So we weren't able to contact her. But she did reach out to me via phone. And informed me that she was extremely upset that there was an interview that was going to happen with her aunt, and which is Miss Jennifer today, who we're speaking with, and that she was going to take legal action if the interview actually happened. And I informed her that my attempt here is to bring Alyssa home and to put the focus on Alyssa. And she was extremely upset during that conversation and very irate, so irate that as a business owner and radio personality and human being, I decided to end the call. And I informed her that I was going to end the call because she wouldn't let me speak. She continued to ask me questions, but then as I tried to answer the question, she would not let me answer the question, so there was no need for me to continue to try and have a conversation at that point. So I did end the call. I was always told you cannot have an informed conversation with somebody who does not want to have an informed conversation. If someone is going to yell, they're not trying to have an informed conversation. They want to prove their point. And so unfortunately, I did end that call. Fortunately and unfortunately, because I would have loved to have spoken with her mother to get some more information about Alyssa, because remember, that's the focus, you know, to give us information so that we can put it out there so that we can tell as many people as we can. We have a great reach in Houston, Texas, and so we'd love to be able to spread the word as far as we possibly can, because right now we don't even know if she's in Houston, Texas. So we want to spread the word as far as we can. This radio network is heard worldwide, and so that is our goal today. That was our goal today. But unfortunately, the mother did not want that to happen. She also sent me a private message in my Facebook Messenger saying the same thing, as well as put a message underneath her daughter's picture, where a flyer we had created for the radio network. And she kept saying, what jarring information do you have? Now, the deal is that the jarring information that we have is that the police department isn't doing anything about this case as they should. And she didn't want to hear any of that. But additionally, there was some additional jarring information. I couldn't even get that piece out. Had she let me continue, she would have potentially gotten the rest of the conversation. Couldn't get that out. We could have figured out what was going on. She could have cleared up a lot of indiscrepancies that we had in that very moment. But because she decided to continue to elevate her voice to where I could not be heard by her, I abruptly ended the conversation. So it has been a crazy time just trying to figure all of this out. And at the end of the day, she's still missing. And there is still a reward, a $25,000 reward for her safe return. Thank you so much to the attorney Giles Mubarak. You guys can look him up online if you're looking for an attorney. He is hireable, okay? Definitely appreciate that. Definitely appreciate you, Jennifer, for continuing on to fight, even though you've hit so many brick walls. I know this has not been an easy journey for you, but we appreciate you continuing to fight.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kia. And thank you again. Let me say this one more time to everyone, because I have not been able to answer every message. But to everyone that has inquired, whether it's been publicly or DM, about Alyssa and has she been found and offered your assistance in any way, because there's been multiple people behind the scenes that have offered different talents and gifts that they may have to assist in this process. I appreciate you. I say thank you to you. I say thank you for caring enough about me to care enough about her, and being willing to help me in any way, you know, that you can. So thank you so much for that. I say God's blessings to all of you. Kia, thank you for being willing again to do this interview and shed light on this. Keeks, I appreciate your interview. I think that at the end of the day, you know, the word is out. You know, we put it out there, and I'm okay with knowing that that's what I can do. You know, I've said the truth. I've said what I know. I've said what I don't know. And so I hope that from all of this, somebody who's listening says, okay, well, I do know something. Let me tell it. Because we need to find her, period. We need to find her, and that is the bottom line.
Well, let's give out the number again for Officer Tim Johnson so that
his
we
number
can
is,
sure. Absolutely.
Yes, 832-394-1868. 832-394-1868.
Again, thank you all so much for tuning in here tonight. Your presence alone is enough. But we need you to do just a little bit more, and that is spread the word that there is a missing child out there that has not, as we know, has not seen a bed, has not had a real decent meal, as we know, because she's missing. So if she's missing and not safe in the arms of a home, she's not getting a good meal, she's not in a good bed, and my heart goes out again to the entire family, to the police department. Please do your due diligence and just investigate, you know, just do your due diligence and just investigate, please. That's all we're asking. Thank you, Keeks, for all of your investigative work. Thank you to Attorney Giles Mubarak, also to your brother. We did have a conversation with your brother, Mr. James, he was able to give us some great information and definitely shed some light as well on the case, and he was actually able to concur just about everything that that we talked about here today. So, people are just really baffled that, you know, one of the things that Mr. James said is that, you know, there has been no movement, you know, and he just doesn't understand why there's no movement from the family on a missing young girl who's 14 years old. So we don't want to point fingers here. That was not the reason for the interview. The reason for the interview was to shine light on Alyssa Williams, who's 14 years old. Got my 14-year-old daughter here with me right now, and I just couldn't even imagine. I could not imagine. So to those of you who have a loved one, this is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and all month long, we will be highlighting Sexual Assault Awareness Month and victims and survivors, so on and so forth, programs, all of that good stuff. So if you're someone who has experienced that and you would love to share, go to our website. We are definitely keeping things private. So if you want, or you're someone who wants to keep your information private, we honor that. Go to our website, www.wetalkradio.com. WeTalkRadio.com. Go to our website, and under our Contact Us page, you can include your information there. You can include your email address with a phone number and a brief description of your what's going on with you. If you'd like, you know, whatever it is, if you want a referral to a program, we have all of that here. So don't sit back and think that no one is here to help. We are 100% here to help. Miss Jennifer is someone who has a she's a mentor. She's a life coach. Miss Jennifer, can you give out your information as well? We'd love for the listeners to be able to contact you. You're excellent at the work that you do.
Yes. So the Jennifer Experience, which is the name of my company, it's a life coaching company, and we coach on all aspects, all things of life. I have associates that work with me. You can always find a list of my services at www.thejenniferexperience.com. Additionally, I am available on all social media sites under the Jennifer Experience. My email is thejenniferexperience@gmail.com. thejenniferexperience@gmail.com. So any of those ways you can reach out to my company. On the website, there's a list of services and prices. And so we also major in the business of helping people like We Talk Radio. So feel free to reach out to us at any time.
Absolutely. Again, we thank you so much for the just the ability to speak on this today and to have the courage to come forward. Not to bash anyone, but just to be able to put the information out there as hard as it was today. We truly appreciate it. For those of you who are wanting to reach out to We Talk Radio Network, you can do that, wetalkradio.com. You can also check us out on all social media platforms. We're available there. Again, this is the Kia D Unplugged Show. We have a plethora of radio shows, and so you can check us out there as well. And we appreciate you. Again, thanks so much for tuning into the Kia D Unplugged Show. We're here usually every single Monday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, but this is a very, very special episode, and so we decided to be here tonight instead so we can just bring as much light to this as possible. We will continue to talk about this case and Alyssa until she is brought home safely. So, again, thank you both so much. Thank you, Cheeks. Thank you, Jennifer. We appreciate it.
Ms. Kia.
Absolutely, darling.
If it's okay with Ms. Jennifer, I share with her a poem that I dedicated to Alyssa. It's really a missing children's poem, but it was dedicated mm-hmm. to Alyssa to help bring light. And if it's okay,
let her read it. Yes.
Absolutely. I would love for you to read that right now. You go right ahead. This is right now. This is the incredible and amazing Keeks.
Okay. This poem is titled, Is Anyone There? Hello. Is anyone there? Have you been impacted by my absence, or does nobody seem to care? Hello? Is anyone there? I hope so, because I'm out here all alone, really needing someone to save me and bring me home. Have my silent cries not been carried by the winds of the night? Is there not anyone out there willing to fight for me because they believe something just isn't right? Did my life only amount up to a few flyers and a few social media posts and nothing more? Because I'm more than just another statistic or trending topic. Missing children are left as pawns to the game of the street, facing the unimaginable with new levels to this game that they're just not equipped to beat. Hello, is anyone there? Hi, yes, you. Do you know something that could help save my life? At this point, it doesn't matter if you were the reason for my strife. Please just open your mouth and say the one thing needed to bust this case out the water. Because, again, I'm more than a number. I'm someone's niece, cousin, sister, friend, and daughter. Please hear my one wish. I don't even need three. My wish is that you hear my name and you fight for me. Fight for me with the mentality that you, your child, and other loved ones could have easily been in my position, fighting for someone to stop and listen. Please do all you can to help bring me home. This poem is dedicated to bringing light to 14-year-old Alyssa Williams, who's missing out of Houston, Texas, since November 5th of 2020. And I am Keeks.
Thank you so much.
Yes, yes. Beautiful, beautiful. Incredibly and talented young lady, the incredible Keeks. Thank you, Keeks. Beautifully written poem. She's an extraordinary writer and journalist and just an amazing young lady. Keeks, if you'd like to give out your contact information, if you don't, that's fine, but if you'd like to give out your contact information for those that would like to follow you, that you can go right ahead.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Instagram at Kicking It With Keeks. That's K I
CKINITWITKEEKS. And if you have any, like, if you need a poem or a wedding vow or anything written, you can reach me at poeticallykeeks@gmail.com.
Give out that information just one more time, your email and the Kickin' with Keeks.
So my Instagram username handle is Kickin' It With Keeks, KICKINITWITKEEKS. And for any content or poem-related things, you can reach me at poeticallykeeks@gmail.com.
Perfect. I love it. Super wonderful. Again, thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And, again, this is so that we can bring awareness to the incredible and the amazing Alyssa Williams. And her extraordinary life is people are fighting for it. And that's all we're here to do today is fight for that. If you have any additional comments or questions that you would like for us to discuss, please don't hesitate to send me an email. That email is KiaD, K-I-A-D, at WeTalkRadio.com. KiaD at WeTalkRadio.com. Again, we're looking to help. If you'd like to volunteer, if you have some efforts to help in the Houston area, all of that good stuff, we'd love to be able to pass that along so that we can get that information into the right hand and, again, get this investigation closed. Again, thank you so much for tuning into the Kia D Unplugged show. We truly, truly appreciate your presence tonight, and we will see you back tomorrow night for the After the Lights Go Out radio show, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. You know how we do. Thanks so much for tuning in. Check us out on social media. Oh, and by the way, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have a huge YouTube push going right now. We can be found at We Talk Radio Network on YouTube. Go check us out. Thanks for tuning in to the Kia D Unplugged show. We Talk Radio. Oh. Yeah.
Broken in two pieces, maybe more, hey. And tonight I made my bed right on the floor. The enemy really tried to take me out, yes. Killing witches that shall knock me down,
hey, come on.
But I'm still standing after all I've been through,
yes,
I survived it all and it's because of you, whoa.
I made it, yeah. I made it, oh, you got it, yeah.
Keep up with what's happening on the We Talk Radio Network by following us on our social media sites. You can get to know us better on all our social media platforms. It's a great way to learn about our radio shows, videos, blogs, community programs, events, and more. We'd love for you to connect with us. Find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Get connected. Stay connected with We Talk Radio, We Talk Radio Network. Check us out at WeTalkRadio.com. Man, we talk, we listen, we make it happen.
Thanks for tuning in to We Talk Radio Network.